Chapter 1. Many U.S. Army personnel began their journey to South Vietnam from the Overseas Processing Terminal in Oakland, California. It was 1970, and just outside the compound, hundreds of hippies and former soldiers picketed and protested against the war. They targeted those soldiers who were dropped off by cabs and heading toward the main gate. Dozens of military police officers, MPs, were holding the protesters at bay and created a clear path through the mob. The crowd tossed flowers at the passing soldiers and chanted loudly for peace. Some in the group pleaded with the new arrivals, trying to convince them to quit the military and refuse to fight in the war. Most soldiers passed through the gates without hesitation. However, a few did stop on occasion to seriously reconsider their options. John Kowalski had passed through the main gate earlier in the day and was wandering through the massive facility, a converted airplane hangar, in search of friends from his advanced infantry training, AIT, platoon, in Fort Polk, Louisiana. The entire training company had received orders for Vietnam, and each person was to report there after a 30-day leave. The PFC was maneuvering his 6-foot frame through the maze of cubicles. The rubber soles of his newly acquired combat boots squeaked loudly as he crossed through these quiet sections. An earlier coat of wax on the red tile floor also made it appear wet and slippery. John stepped along cautiously, as if walking on ice. The 20-foot by 20-foot cubicles, comprised of 8-foot-high pieces of plywood and 2x4s, rose up toward the 30-foot ceiling. Each of these enclosures held a dozen bunk beds. Sleeping youths occupied many while awaiting their turn to fly off to war. His efforts to find a familiar face within the maze were unsuccessful, so he began a quarter-mile hike to the other side of the building, which was set aside for recreation. He found the area to be quite active and noisy compared to the morgue-like atmosphere he had just left. Here there were hundreds of highly enthused soldiers, all dressed in jungle fatigues, the Green Machine. Rows of pool and ping-pong tables cluttered the area, but were very visible through the crowd. It was obvious that many of the players were having difficulty with their games, the close proximity of the many spectators inhibiting their movements. John stood on the outskirts, looking in. He removed his olive-green baseball cap and ran his hand over the light brown stubble length of hair. Satisfied that it was again growing, he replaced the cap and traced a line across the rough 4-inch-long scar on the left side of his neck, the consequence of a confrontation with some escaped felons during basic training. His hazel eyes continued to scan the many faces, hoping to spot someone he knew. Suddenly, a player on a nearby ping-pong table backed up quickly to return a hard serve from his opponent. He tripped over a spectator, creating a domino effect on the group standing behind him. A young soldier, who looked 15 at most, found himself sprawled out on top of the adjacent pool table. The remaining balls were scattered, some falling to the floor, along with a stack of $10 bills. All of this happened as an African-American soldier, twice the kid's size, was preparing to take an advantageous shot. He became enraged.
"You dumb motherfucker! I had this game in the bag!"
"It wasn't my fault," the kid cried out in a shaky voice. "I got pushed up here by those other guys."
He pointed to the soldiers standing around the ping-pong table.
"Push my ass," the black soldier challenged. "You just cost me $100, so pay me what I lost and I'll let you slide."
"I don't have that kind of money,"
the skinny kid replied, climbing down from the table.
"Let me see your wallet. I'll take what I think is fair,"
the behemoth threatened, reaching behind the kid to snatch the wallet from his back pocket. The kid pushed back into the crowd, attempting to escape the reach of the thoroughly pissed-off army private.
"It was an accident," he hollered.
"You're not taking my wallet."
The crowd tightened, everyone shifting to find the best unobstructed view of the altercation. Trapped, the kid had no place to go.
"Come on, brothers, are you with me?"
the soldier called out to a group of black comrades standing nearby.
"This white boy owes me some money."
His supporters wielded cue sticks and pool balls and moved toward the petrified youth. A group of white soldiers took a step forward,
ushering the young kid behind the pack and quickly engulfing him. One of them stated in a southern drawl,
"Why don't you boys pick on somebody your own size?"
Hearing this, the leader of the black group turned to his followers and said giddily,
"I guess we have to kick a whole lot of white ass to get my money."
"Yeah, let's do it. We're with you,"
his followers chanted. Individuals within the black group were now beating the palms of their hands with the thick end of the cue sticks and lofting pool balls lightly into the air. Two of them broke ranks and moved toward the white group. Suddenly, a dozen MPs forced their way through the crowd before either of the two groups could strike a blow.
"Let's break this shit up,"
the MP sergeant ordered, separating soldiers and shoving them out of his way. He stopped, facing the leader of the black group.
"What is this all about?"
he asked.
"That skinny white boy owes me $100,
the black private protested, pointing out the alleged culprit.
"All I want to do is get my money back, and these white boys want to come over here and start some shit with us."
"Well, that's bullshit, Sarge," the southern soldier responded. "There was an accident. The kid fell on the pool table and fucked up their game. He doesn't know 'em shit."
"Is that correct, Private?"
The sergeant fixed a deep, piercing stare at the kid.
"Yes, Sergeant,"
he replied in a trembling voice.
"There was a lot of shuffling and pushing behind me. I found myself sprawled out on the top of the pool table. I couldn't help myself."
"Well, that's a damn lie,"
the black soldier protested.
"I couldn't give a fuck about the game. I'm pissed because he pocketed my money during all the commotion."
"I don't think he has the balls to do something like that,"
the sergeant replied after sizing him up.
"I'd be willing to forget this incident if everybody would just walk away and return to what they were doing."
"What are you going to do if we don't? Send us to Vietnam?"
a voice called out from the crowd. The taunt was enough to change the atmosphere of the group, and some began to laugh and snicker.
"Yeah, you'll still go to Vietnam, but you may spend a few weeks in our stockade first,"
the sergeant growled. The crowd started to disperse, and the soldiers moved away, resuming their activities from before the interruption. The black soldier shifted back and forth from one foot to another, his expression changing as he tried to compose himself. The MP sergeant looked at him.
"Well, what's it going to be?"
"I let it go, man. I don't need any bad time on my record. I just want to serve my year and get back home."
"Then do I have your word that you won't bother these guys anymore?"
"Yeah, man, you got my word."
He turned and walked back to the pool table and his waiting friends. The kid had vanished. Once everything was back to normal, John turned and moved toward yet another undiscovered part of the large building. After a few minutes, he heard a familiar voice call out.
"Hey, Polak!"
He stopped and looked around for the source.
"Hey, Polak, over here!"
A tall, lanky soldier with red hair, freckles, and a broad, toothy grin called out again. He was pushing through the crowd and waving frantically. John's face lit up in recognition, returning the man's wave with a wild one of his own.
"Bill!"
he called loudly after seeing his close friend from training. They embraced warmly like long-lost relatives.
"Polak, you son of a bitch! Am I ever glad to see you?"
Bill, as gaunt as a scarecrow, slapped John's back a few times.
"Well, I am too, Bill. How the hell are you?"
"Well, I'm good. When'd you get here?"
"About 4 hours ago. What about you?"
"I got here yesterday."
"Why'd you come so early, Bill? Didn't they have a flight available when you needed it?"
"I didn't fly. I took a train instead."
"You rode a train all the way here from Tennessee? Are you shitting me?"
"Nope. I've never been on a plane in my whole life,"
Bill admitted sheepishly.
"I was so afraid of the thought of flying that I checked into the train schedule and found that I had to leave a couple of days earlier to get here on time."
"How did you get home from Fort Polk?"
"I rode in by bus."
"Damn, Bill, you missed out on 3 days of your leave just because you're afraid of flying?"
"Yeah, I know. Don't remind me."
"Now you don't have a choice. There aren't many trains or buses that go to Vietnam."
"I know, and I thought hard about it on the way here. I got a perfect solution. I'll get drunk and pass out. That way somebody can just carry me on board."
"Maybe they can give you a shot or something to relax."
"No, thanks. I've had enough shots for now. Once I got here, they gave me a worse physical than the one I had to take when the Army first called me up. Here, they move you along like an assembly line."
"Oh, I know what you mean. And that paperwork was really a bummer. There must have been 25 forms to fill out." Bill produced a wide smile.
Yeah, that part took me almost an hour.
The two young men commiserated about the humiliating experience of having to strip down to their underwear and stand in long lines of strangers from all over the country, herded along like cattle.
What'd you think when you saw the 10 doctors on each side of the line giving everyone shots with those air-powered guns?
Well, I didn't have time to think. I just blindly followed everyone else and hoped for the best.
A guy in front of me moved his arms just as the doctor pulled the trigger, Bill commented, and when the blood spurted out, I almost shit myself.
The shots weren't too bad, kind of felt like a punch in my arm, but as I'm standing here now, they're starting to ache pretty damn bad, John said.
It'll feel better in a few hours. I feel fine today, Bill volunteered.
The thing I didn't like was having to ship all of our own clothes and stuff home. What a hassle. And these new jungle fatigues and boots we're in are just like those in basic training.
Yeah, but it's all worth it. Don't we look good?
Bill asked, striking a pose. John would not have been more surprised if Bill's ball cap came off his head and twirled in the air by itself. Bill flexed his arms and posed like a bodybuilder in the final pose of a competition. His head quivered as he strained his muscles. Bill's face was stern and solemn as he concentrated on this show of strength. John suddenly burst out laughing.
Damn, Bill, what was that all about? It looked like an advertisement for Scarecrows Incorporated.
He stopped chuckling before continuing.
All you needed was a bit of hay sticking out in the right places, and you'd have nailed it.
John pointed to Bill's face.
I especially like how you managed to cover your front teeth with your lower lip. You did look scary, but it almost seemed like you had a mouthful of snuff.
Okay, okay. You've had your fun for the day, Polak.
Bill looked more hurt than embarrassed. Bill Sayers, raised in the backwoods of Tennessee, spoke with a heavy southern drawl. He was the third eldest of nine children who shared everything from chores to clothes while growing up on the family farm. He had never experienced the feeling of receiving new clothes. All he had ever worn were hand-me-downs from his older brothers. When the Army issued him the first five sets of new fatigues, he treated them as if they were made of gold.
Come on, Bill. I'm just giving you a hard time. I didn't mean anything by it.
John wrapped his arm over his buddy's shoulder and pulled him tightly.
You have to admit, it was funny as hell.
Both men shared a hearty laugh.
Have you found a bunk yet?
Bill asked.
Not yet. Great. Then come with me. I have a cubicle all to myself. Well, lead the way.
John followed Bill to the other side of the building and then through the maze of cubicles for another 10 minutes before reaching the smaller room with six bunk beds.
Looks like it'll be nice and quiet here. Shit, it is now. Yesterday you couldn't hear yourself think.
And why was that? John inquired.
I had to share this cube with 10 other guys who have been together since basic training, and all they did was party the whole night.
What happened to them?
They left on the first flight this morning, so I guess it's just you and me until new neighbors move in.
Oh, I'm okay with that. Have you seen anyone else from our AIT platoon yet?
Yeah, matter of fact, yesterday I bumped into Joel McCray and Larry Nichols. Do you remember them?
I do. Where are they?
They left this morning with those other guys. And you'll never believe who else was with them.
Who?
Sergeant Holmes. No shit. I thought he was returning to Fort Polk this week to start training a new platoon of recruits.
Well, that was his original plan, but he had his orders changed during his leave and volunteered for a second tour.
Why did he do a fool thing like that?
Oh, he told me that he's fed up with the civilians and all the hippies. He said that while he's on leave, people would spit on him and got in his face yelling that he was teaching soldiers to be baby killers and then sending them off to Vietnam. And he said there was not a day gone by without somebody picking a fight with him. After the cops had jailed him for the second time for disorderly conduct, he went and signed the papers.
Oh, the world is filled with jerks. Too bad he had to volunteer for Nam to get away from it all. Do you know he was wounded during his first tour? John asked.
Yeah, I remember him telling the story about that big Tet offensive in 68. He got some shrapnel in his back from a mortar round. But he also said that the fighting is not at the same level as it was in 1968 or earlier. So we all have a good chance of making it home in one piece.
Well, I hope that's true. In the AIT company,
Everyone liked Bill because he always had something good to say about others. Stories told about life in the big cities fascinated him to no end. It was difficult for him to imagine doing things that many city folks took for granted as part of their everyday lives. He walked everywhere, including the 3 miles each way to school and back. In fact, the first time Bill had ever ridden a bike was in the Army. Bill and John became very close while serving together in the Army. They had developed a friendship that made it easy to confide in one another on sensitive issues. John had promised to visit Bill in the hills of Tennessee one day, but only if Bill agreed to visit him in Detroit. Bill was ecstatic and could not wait. He continued to remind John periodically of this agreement. All the excitement of the day was beginning to take its toll. Both were tired and struggling to stay awake. "I had it rough last night," John began. "My mother gave me a going-away party yesterday. All of my close friends and relatives were there. After dinner, we all sat in the living room and talked while the news was on TV. Everyone quieted down when a bulletin came on from Vietnam. It seemed some outfit ran into an ambush, and they showed helicopters burning. Dead and wounded soldiers were carried past the camera, and the commentator sounded so nervous. The women looked over at me and started crying. They all ran over and hugged me."
"Damn," Bill said with a sympathetic look on his face.
"Well, you know me," John continued. "I put on the brave act and told them that nothing was going to happen to me while I was in Vietnam. I told them that we'd all be back in this same living room in a year to laugh off those worries."
"Well, what happened then?"
"Everyone started to leave for home before it got too emotional. When everyone left, I went up to my bedroom and I tried to sleep, but I just couldn't. I kept thinking about that news story and got all shaky and nervous."
"Pollock, you aren't alone in that feeling. I'm scared, too."
Both said quietly for a few moments. John lay back in his bunk and glanced to his watch. It was 3:30 in the morning. He thought about everything that had happened since leaving Detroit only 15 hours earlier. Everything seemed to be hurry up and wait. On the flight to California, he had been the only military passenger. The flight attendants and fellow passengers had made him feel special. When they heard he was en route to Vietnam, they bought him drinks, offered him magazines and candy, and wished him luck on his tour. He was very proud and felt honored by the way he was treated. His fellow passengers respected him, and not one person had treated him as Sergeant Holmes had been treated.
"Hey, Pollock, get your lazy ass out of that bunk!"
Bill shook him a few times. Startled, John jumped up from his bed quickly, bumping his head on the frame of the upper bunk.
"Damn, Bill, you scared the shit out of me,"
he grumbled, rubbing the top of his head. John looked at his watch and noted that it was 1,330 hours.
"Jesus, Bill, it's 1:30. When did you get up?"
Bill looked at his watch.
"Oh, about 6 hours ago." "Why didn't you get me up sooner?" "Hell, I'd have been wasting my time. I know you city boys like your sleep. You'd sleep all day long, somebody'd let you. Besides, it wasn't necessary for both of us to check the shipping manifest for today."
"What did you find out?"
"Both of our names are listed. We're leaving for Vietnam at 10 o'clock tonight."